Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Namaste, my friends. This is Ali Vishal Rubin here to welcome you to the Yoga Revealed podcast. Today we have a special treat for you. It is an honor to introduce the beautifully devoted Janet Stone. Janet weaves together the sacred teachings of the Hindu deities with her teaching of the asana practice in order to produce a truly magical and devotional experience for her students.
Use, you know, the realm of the heart to really awaken the body, and also use the body to awaken the heart. Without this vessel, without its interconnectedness, we wouldn't be able to experience what we experience. We experience everything through our senses.
Janet and I sat down while at the Hanuman Yoga Festival earlier in June, and we are so excited to share her story with you. Wait until the end of the podcast, and you can have an opportunity to receive 20% off on her Svadharma online immersion. Stay tuned and enjoy this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. Namaste, my friends, and welcome to the Yoga Revealed podcast. We're here in beautiful Boulder, Colorado, with an amazing view of the Flatirons, and it is such a blessing to sit across from the wisdom keeper and the one and only Miss Janet Stone. Miss Janet, thank you so much for being here in Colorado for Hanuman Yoga Festival and taking some time to share with us your story and your path and who you are.
Thank you so much for the invitation and for rolling right in.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, could you share with us a little synopsis of where you're coming from, pre-yoga perhaps, and how yoga was revealed to you, and really what set you out on this path of devotion?
Yeah, I don't know. A synopsis. How long do you guys have? Because I feel like these, you know, if we really trace it back, these paths begin probably even before we were born, but not to go super meta. We'll get into the details of it. And, you know, I was raised in a home of sort of alternative thinking and moving through the world with attempting to expand our view. And my grandfather and three generations before were born and raised in India. So that sort of came back with them to California and was infused in some of my living and some of the ways in which we moved it through the world. And then I took really fascinating adventures. I lived in Paris. I did hardcore adventure racing and multi-sporting and hardcore mountain biking. I lived here in Colorado for a while, and I would jump off of any high precipice and, you know, really just found ways to push my body and explore what it was to really use it. And my father passed away when he was younger than I am now. He was 45, and, you know, just really set me on a slightly different path of inquiry. So all that outer and all that great awakening of the outer body and this push and what are the limits, and became a bit internalized. At that point, I moved to LA, as one would do when you're soul searching, or somehow ended up there. But and then just slid into the film industry, and I was there for a dozen years. And a lot of self-reflection, a lot of beautiful awareness and awakening, and believe it or not. It's not all just on the surface. And somewhere about midway on that journey, I took a hiatus, as they say in that industry, not a sabbatical, but you take a hiatus. And I traveled off into the world. I spent a lot of time in Egypt and a lot of time in India and then Nepal. And it just kind of kept going. It was about a year and a half. And really, from the first moment I landed in, arrived in India, it's like yoga was waiting for me, and not in an ashram and not in a particular form, though it did come eventually. I did come to Shivananda, but really in the people that I met, I felt like it was just thrumming with the practices of yoga in so many ways, of that birth-death cycle, really watching the samskaras and the karmas unfold, my own in relationship to this. And yeah, and then the people along the path just kept sharing asana practices as well. And eventually, yeah, I arrived back to LA and I was working on Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, and I was practicing. I couldn't figure out where to practice after that adventure, and I was practicing with Brian Kest in the dance home and Max Strom, who really like put my feet back on the ground. And he told me one day, he was like, "You'll teach yoga." And I'm like, "No, I'm good. I've got it sorted out." And dare I say, here I am, you know? I don't know, that doesn't really fill it in, but yeah, I feel like.
So you feel like you had a really, truly genuine introduction to yoga through conversation.
Yeah.
Through interpersonal connection.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah. I'd really, you know, in Boulder, I'd come to a teacher called Maraji at the time, and he eventually took his real name, Prem Rawat. And, you know, so starting at 17, there was a lot of internal reflection, as I was mentioning. And then the way it actually came, and the yoga, and the many principles, and the Eightfold Path really started to be a relationship of conversation, as you said, of living.
Did you feel like right away, bhakti? Or did it take time?
No, it took time, for sure.
Can you tell us a little about that timeline?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that I would hear the Brahminical chants and there would be bhakti and that, you know, something would soften around the heart, or I would have these conversations with these gurus that wouldn't call themselves gurus, but I would call them great teachers. And it could be, a woman yak herder who is a guru to me, you know, in a particular moment. And then the deeper studies, but yeah, no, bhakti sort of slowly emerged. And when I was back in Los Angeles, there was a moment when Max was oming, and something absolutely melted or broke apart in the heart that had been a shell of protection. So I feel like those are the moments that bhakti really comes alive, and that is one moment, it just, of the many, that it came into play.
The shell of protection.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that?
Mm.
And how we're walking around it, perhaps with these shells of who we are, we have these veil, right?
Mm.
And we connect more with ourselves, and whatever practice it is, sometimes we're removing this veil, and then it's like...
Yeah.
Speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. The shell around the heart is the shell of our stories, is the shell of our misidentification, in a sense, with all of our stories, the I ams.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a way of protecting ourselves from really seeing someone or be seen by someone. Definitely there's the big moments of the mind-blowing and, whoa, that veil comes down, but we still live in a day-to-day life where we're bumping up against our own boundaries of human body, of human needs, and other people's boundaries of human bodies and human needs, and you know how to stay supple in the heart around that, including love and loss and change and impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy as we go along to, without even a statement of I'm going to protect this, we just start layer after layer. And that's why it's an endless practice, because we forget and we remember. And that's how I perceive this practice, in that we forget the truth of our heart or our true nature, and the practice is about remembering, and even if it's just for a moment, that suppleness or that softness around the heart.
It's a great gift. One of my teachers used to say, you know, how when we forget to remember, and to remember devotion, to remember practice, and remember the breath. So, you know, in your own practice, as you have slowly taken off these shells of protection, how have you sat with discomfort in your life as it perhaps has arisen?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's it. I feel like one of the teachings that was offered to me is about finding the ground. And in finding the ground, I feel like we can sit, and we can sit in the undulations of our own emotion, right? Wow, there, pause for 5 minutes and watch your emotional self go on this journey, right? And we can ground ourselves in the moments of loss and the moments of even great joy and all the good things coming our way, and not get lost in the mind and then construct a whole story around it. So, yeah, it's, I think discomfort, destigmatizing discomfort, destigmatizing, like, the yoga, I think a lot of people come in and they want to have this vision that it's just wee, beautiful, and then I'm going to be blissed out, and it's just, it's real, and it's actually you sit in your own humanness, and then you bump into other people's humanness, and being able to be as heart soft and spacious as possible to hold that, and sometimes when you're not, being compassionate around that as well. Like, I I'm not able to do this at this moment. I'm going into my small self or my little stories, and then sit back down, find the ground,
and dissolve the stories.
Yeah.
So right here, you had mentioned how you have a recognition for the asana. And what is it that you're hoping to transmit to your students through your asana and through the practice of bhakti, and bringing those two together? Let's talk about that.
Yummy. Why not use, you know, the realm of the heart to really awaken the body, and also use the body to awaken the heart? Without this vessel, without its interconnectedness, we wouldn't be able to experience what we experience. We experience everything through our senses. And so much of these practices of becoming more strong, but in not in a rigid, hard, outer shell way, but internally strong and connected and supple at the same time, right? Then we have a more porous connectivity to enter into the heart region, into not love of like, you know, let's have this agreement, let's love each other, but love. And that's bhakti, right? Love. And, you know, I think many people have an interesting perception on devotion. It's, yay, Hare Krishna, and, you know, and devotion is so deeply steeped in what you're giving your time to, what you're giving your thoughts to, what you're giving your life force to. Meaning, am I devoted to fear? Do I run around fear-based? That's my devotion then, because I'm giving my precious resources to that. Am I running around comparative living? Oh, he's doing better, she's doing better, I'm, you know? And bhakti is just softening around so much of that. Being in body, letting the body be, sure, awake, alive, vital. I love the play of the body. Thank goodness. But it too will go. And somehow, we all have this little part of ourselves that imagines we're the exception. Like, we can, if I can do enough chaturangas, like, somehow it's not going to decay and go move on.
Until it does.
Until it does. And then we fight, and you see a culture, a whole culture here fighting time. And you can still be alive and vital and strong, but certainly you eventually learn, I would imagine, through these practices that the body comes and the body goes, you know, and it's what we do with this generous gift of our life force while we're here.
You know, the theme of devotion has just been such a full encapsulating resonance over the weekend and over the Hanuman conversations that we're having. Hanuman. So, you know, was there a moment, a situation, a day in your life when you woke up and you were past this old samskara, this old way of seeing, and devotion just poured in, and you could see the world through new eyes. I don't know if this resonates in your past experience whatsoever, but is there a time when you just felt...
My heart is for you. Many times, and that I know that that's not great for story wise, but it is a progressive, slow, steady, and then at moments you can never know when it's going to happen. This burst, this or melting, whichever way you want to imagine it, into presence. This that is so beautiful that tears just come. I'll just go into bhakti realm and, you know, just feel this persona, this mask melt, and so I could tell you about the mountain top moment. I could tell you about sitting at, you know, Jayutal's feet, and it's just one note that he hits, and it's just I can tell you about my daughter who's, you know, at 4 just singing the Hanuman Chalisa, just so cute, that high little voice, and you're just present, and that's, you know, that's devotion, being really willing to step into the present moment of whatever it is. Those are all the beautiful ones, and I'm sure there were some tough bhakti moments as well.
When it comes to chanting, what is it, who is it, what deities are you looking to invoke, and, you know, how do you allow this ancient wisdom to become accessible for those who may be a little... hesitant.
Yeah. First of all, I like that.
I was definitely one of those people the very first day, I remember. And it has my heart.
For sure. Come and hang out with me, because that is what I am told that I weave in well, and that just, that it's humanity. It's our humanness, and these mythologies and these stories, or whether you're saying, oh, this really happened, I'm not going to argue with you, I wasn't there. But what I do is I tell these stories that are absolutely relevant to this exact moment, to these ways in which, you know, with Hanuman specifically, like, he doesn't have his superpowers revealed again to him until he's in devotion to Dharma. And so if we get lost in the word Dharma, but the highest path, like his most full, rich path, and Sita, the earth and the groundedness, you know, until those moments and he's in complete, utter devotion, oh, his superpowers are then relieved. And so how is that not relevant now when we get lost and pulled by all of these outer forces? The moment that we actually can find what we're truly in service of during this life, during this journey, toward our higher selves, really meaning that we act with compassion, with kindness, with truthfulness, you know, in really tangible ways, not just sort of, oh, my highest self, like really tangible ways of acting in a way that feels aligned with your heart, right? Tangible ways, not just words of higher self. The Dharma of really being, living in that. And it's not easy. Try being honest all the way through a day, like full, flat out. It's intense. And aligning with that releases your superpowers, you know, and who can't relate to that? In that, then you're freed up of all of the ways of trying to hide and manipulate the whole world to fit into the story that you're attempting to show out in the world. And that's one, that's Hanuman. And then there's Durga and the many weapons, and then she actually wins through her vulnerability, burying her foot and walking toward the demon. Who doesn't try all of these weapons and all these things to slay their own inner demon? I'm not going to eat sugar, I'm going to do this, I'm going to fast, I'm going to do this. And then it always comes back to just this great vulnerability. So in each one of these stories, Lakshmi, just really the sense of being enough. Like, I have enough, I am enough, that's it. And so all of them stream through my life, and I do give a certain weight to various expressions and aspects of me at different times, meaning that at times when I'm gripping onto something, I'll notice I'm tightening around some idea of how my life should be or idea of a relationship, then I'll probably come visit Shiva and be just like, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, like soften my grip, you know, let me release my illusion or delusion, because I sure get lost just like everybody else in the story.
Beautiful. Thank you for that, for illuminating some of the deities and, you know, what they have to offer.
Yeah.
I find that perhaps as we invocate these deities, it begins to rewrite a story in our mind. Perhaps we've used the word samskara a few times, and maybe for our listeners that is a very foreign word. Can you highlight this word and let's talk about samskara?
Yeah, so samskara, we could really get stuck on this for a while, couldn't we? Because it's samskara. We're in the loop. And, you know, how it was really beautifully shared with me fairly recently is that samskaras are that we are acting from undigested experiences. Meaning, once again, you cut me off in traffic. I have fury come up. I get really angry, or something comes up like, it's unjust in some way. And not saying that that's just not a human thing, but there often, if we really reel back and reel back and reel back, there's some undigested experience of not having fairness. Your body has not had a full moment to digest some either happening in this life or maybe in your parents' life. Like we can look at the chain, look at your mom and dad, look at your aunts and uncles, look at your grandparents, look at the people around you, the sort of the line at which it comes down, and we're all sort of cyclically going through these journeys. What are we carrying that has not been assimilated or digested? The car experience would be just one little tiny thing, but just watch yourself relationally. Watch how you perceive the world, what lenses you're looking through. And you're looking through lenses that are often clouded by undigested experiences. Yeah?
Yeah. Sounds so much of yoga is relationship.
And about digestion. You know, when you're in the body part of the practice, there is so much about digesting. Like literally digesting your food, literally figuring out what's nutrients and waste. And then also on the visual impressions we take in, emotional experiences we have. You'll see now, culturally, like, people have a baby and they're expected to just jump back in the world, like, get to it, right? Why aren't you in your skinny jeans and, you know, being contributing to society? And it's like, digest the shift, digest the transformation, or whatever transition, whatever is happening.
Transformation is not easy.
No, and we're going through it every minute. Yeah, we talk about the big transformation, but we're always transforming. That's why, again, bhakti and asana and any of these practices are always alive, because every day I step on my mat, I can't tell you how many Surya Namaskars I've done. And every time it's different.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so.
You know, when you say the great transition,
yeah,
transformation,
yeah,
what I think of is when I drop my body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about when we're still in our bodies, what is the great transformation?
I think the great transformation is really understanding that we will drop the body. And that it happens just in this beautiful, slow, constant remembering. That's the big transformation. Is being able to be here, have this, know it's going. Have this still, know it's going. And I feel like more than the big aha moment, which are always amazing, but then, you know, it's just... It's like enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. right? It's just still transformation is in the way that I actually communicate with my children. Mm. It's the way that I wash the dishes and I'm present in an interaction.
Mm.
I think those are the beautiful moments of transformation.
How has becoming a mother transformed you?
Infinitely. Becoming a mother is, it's shedding a whole other layer. And of course, you could put on all of your jackets of momness, but I've used the yoga, and the yoga's used me, and my kids have been the great teachers of keeping that space open, being curious, being inquisitive of what is it to share a light, you know, really feel like, okay, I bring this in. How much of it do I own? How much do I not? Open-handed. It's an endless practice.
You know, I hope this is true. Let's see, I YouTubed you, and there's this video, I think, of your kid teaching yoga to all these adults.
Yeah, very possible.
It was really cute.
Yeah.
And hilarious.
Yeah, you'll see, you know, my youngest at Bhakti Fest, and she was like 4 or 5, and she's just... telling everyone what to do. And,
yes.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
But yeah, they were in a sling and nursing. I was teaching, and you're in the flow of living. They've been to India many times, and and that's a teacher. I mean, everyone has this, oh, that's so amazing, and it's like, yeah. And then I was on an airplane for 36 hours with a 8-month-old, and that's amazing. And you just keep moving and you keep breathing.
Who have been your biggest teachers?
Aside from those two?
Yes.
I would say Prem Rawat Maharaji is really the way he stepped into my life and kept the message and continues to keep the message very simple about, hey, it's here. What are you looking for? It's right here. The gift is right here. You've been given this breath. Yoo-hoo! That's really it. And he says it in a myriad of beautiful and funny and wonderful ways and has meditation techniques, and that's great. But really just that message again and again and again. It's like, oh, right. We love to make it complicated. So yeah. Prem Rawat. The Shivananda lineage, and I couldn't, pick out a particular teacher, but in India, I dove in. And again, those various teachers along the path that I couldn't name. And then Max Strom. I mean, Max, I would credit him for really saying to me, here's the ground, here are your feet, feel it, and we want you here, and you will teach yoga. And me scoffing at him and letting him, and him being really sweetly patient as yoga just literally came and grabbed me by the hair and took me. Yeah, and I would say, in the last many handfuls of years, maybe 7, I practiced my own home practice of shadow yoga. So Zonders, Scott Blossom shared it out, and I don't teach it. But that's been a really amazing teaching for me. And then, of course, I've just been in the light of so many amazing teachers and given myself over to many great teachers. Mm. Yeah.
So it sounds like to me that you have a high value on the student-teacher relationship, which I find just to be, as I am so blessed to study with Richard and Mary, it is just an incredible gift and blessing to have yoga poured into you as it has been poured into them, and then more and more that's transmitted out into the world and shared.
Yep.
What would you have to offer to our listeners who perhaps don't feel like they could say, this is my teacher. I haven't found my teacher yet. And to stay in faith.
Right. Well, and that's it. The shraddha, the faith of keeping yourself open enough. And then also not too open. It's a trick, right? Because you see a lot of people just popping from teacher to teacher. And it's like, I took that workshop, I took that, I took that. And then it becomes what it is. And you integrate it through your body. You digest it. And it will emanate as it emanates. But there is nothing like sitting. And I say at the feet of the teacher, not, and again, in the West, we have such a different perception of that.
Mm.
But literally where you get to step out of the way, where you get to be... really just humbled in your own self and not be orchestrating the whole play. When you have a teacher, you simply nod your head, yes, and you go, I trust you. And not blind faith, not just running on blind faith. Obviously, if you have a strong intuitive nature, you'll know when something's off. But to relax in for a moment, to just let yourself be seen in ways that you can't see yourself. We have our blind spots. And it's very possible that along the path you'll hear a voice, one moment, one day, that it will simply resonate in the heart. It's not a mind decision. I feel like a teacher isn't a mental decision. I feel like, and the way we do things now, I could see how everything is so far away and online, and so you could be like, oh, I think I've heard, and you know, and you'd be drawn, and then you feel. But I think an in-person, you can feel it. You can feel it. And, sure. And if you can sink into what your intention is around the practice, then you'll probably meet that just right guide or support for you along your trip.
You said the word intention, and that I find is always a beautiful conversation. How has intention in your life increased the quality of your life?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, intention, and it's talked about and sometimes over talked about, but it's like drishti. It's like drishti. If you don't put your gaze in any place, you don't know, you can't even, where are you headed? You're headed in every direction. And intention to me is narrowing that gaze. And for me, there's a looking back into the heart and out into the world, meaning what is resonant in my heart, what is actually the call of my heart, and then how am I acting in the world? So it's this intention sits here as if as a sort of an outer word and an outer thing. Like you can write an intention down, but as it moves into the heart and then as it moves into action, I feel it becomes dynamic. And these two then will have an interchangeable way of guiding you, right? And guiding you. And again, this sounds, it can sometimes sound a little big and vague, but it's on really small, detailed levels. What am I going to purchase at the store? What store am I going to go to? You know, how am I going to sue the friend who just lost someone? How am I going to deal with being overtired and overbooked? You know? Intention, I feel like, can clarify and declutter a lot of our ways of being.
Lifting the opaque view.
Yeah, because we're, you know, just, if we're running in all directions and grasping at everything, because we want every flavor and every sight, and we see how we do that, we probably see how other people do that.
You know, as I was sitting the other day, and I was really looking forward to our conversation today, I was looking always to dive more and more into devotion and into bhakti. It's just a constant theme in my life right now. Yeah. How do you pray? And what is prayer? What are you praying for? Who? Mm-hmm. I say, you know, very mindfully. Mm-hmm. Are you praying towards yourself, your heart, your wisest self? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are beautiful questions, and everyone gets to go on an exploration, hopefully, a journey with what that is for them. And for myself, yeah, it's... prayer comes back to living. Prayer comes back to my level of attention, that I don't miss a look from my daughter, or that I actually can notice and pay attention when someone's face shifts or a mood shifts or an internal need comes forth. To me, that's part of prayer. Now, I travel to India often, and I'll go to temples, and some temples are just rocks, right, that with lingams carved in or whatever, and you'll see grooves from people's prostrations with their forehead down on the ground. I personally do prostrations every day. I do them incorporated with my Surya Namaskar, with my movement, And I pause and I put my whole body down, face down on the ground. Whatever environment, I don't carry a mat. I don't often practice on a mat. So whatever it is, I'm going. Mm. And to me, it's a moment of prostration, which is pranidhana, you know, of the Ishvara pranidhana. What is the Ishvara? What is the Lord? What is the God? What is the thing that you're surrendering to? That's for each individual, and it seems to be, for me and my clarification, really about life, surrendering to the life that is here, not constructing a story around it, not forcing it in one direction or the other, but softening this whole front body that is Shakti, that is so much about pushing into the world and expressing and the Janet-ness of me, right? And that moment on the floor, I'm just a body on the floor, just touching in. A prayer also to all the beings that have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Think of all the life forms that have ever come before, all their drama, their joy, their fears, their birth, their death. Like, we've been around a long time. And in that moment, I put my full body on the ground. That's just right. I'm just in a stream of being.
Mm. Wow, that's beautiful. Ishvara. So, in the days when, you know, when we create an awareness of Ishvara, of this devotion to life,
mm-hmm.
you know, this reverence for our breath that
yeah.
we're able to wake up to, in the moments when, like, the pattern of society of like go 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 go, like keep going and then keep going even more and you can't stop,
right?
That anxiety, and it almost is as if Ishvara is like, she's always there.
Yeah.
Right, but the moments when we forget, how can we come back?
Mm.
Just like to tap back in.
I think that's why for me consistent practice has been grueling, brutal, and nothing like it. Amazing. Because I just come back to the same place every time. And it's like, oh, right. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prayer of the body. And I sit. I do meditation. I do sit. And I feel like we can move all the bodies. We can engage all the muscles. We can know what the fascia is doing. We can know how to put our bones, our ligaments. But if we can't sit in this structure for a period of time, you know, and that's to be self-decided in a sense, or to be guided by a teacher. But yeah, that to me is a place of remembering what the Ishvara, where that is coming back to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if I can't get it through just sitting and your mind is still racing, sometimes pranayamas or mantras, you know, that's why those, you know, why else would I run my fingers on 108 beats? I mean, truly, I'm the first to call out, that's silly. And at the same time, it directs our attention, what is happening right here and now. It pulls forth, sure, a vibration or resonance of what you're calling in, whatever mantra, om, om, om. It could be a big, long one. You could do the whole Gayatri on 108, whatever it is that gives you pause to slow it down.
Mm. How do you encourage students or newcomers to the path to cultivate a consistent
mm-hmm.
practice, whatever it is?
Mm-hmm. By, one, having my own consistent practice, not telling people what to do, from like, hey, it's a good idea. I've heard consistent practice is a great idea. But actually having my own
mm-hmm.
consistent practice,
mm-hmm.
really remaining a student of it,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to shift. And also, realistic. What is the reality of your life? And let's go back to intention. If your intention is one thing, then you're going to have a 3-hour practice. And I'm going to say, great. If you're living and you're taking care of other things, you're doing other things in the world, then your practice is going to be like this. But people think it has to look a certain way. But if it could simply be consistency. Consistency, consistency, consistency. All teachers have said that. Not do a 2-hour practice one day and then blow it off for...
Mm-hmm.
Because this thread in this way of bringing ourselves back to the intention, to the Ishvara, Yeah.
I think the consistency of practice in my life has been the saving grace of befriending my mind.
It's wild in there.
It's a crazy place, but it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Janet, well, you know, how do you stay in play? How do you continue to play? I see it in your eyes of how much excitement you have to be here, and as you approach Boulder and you approach life, how do you stay in play with all the work and travel that you do?
The Rasa Lila, you know, it is the divine play. I mean, honestly, it's my teachers, and really being watching them go through their journey and what they've handed down, I get to sort of laugh at myself, not take it too seriously. Here is the mantra that helped me a long time ago. It's not about me. And if you can kind of get on board with it's not about me, then you're just in, we're all acting these characters, and we're dancing through this life, and might as well be kind to each other. Might as well be kind to yourself as much as possible. And yeah, it's a lot of movement, you know, with what I do. And I am met in every place I go, at least by the time that I go, with so much heart and so much a desire to wake up, to just be awake, and to be seen and to see themselves. So I'm moved and inspired and nourished by that as well. And my kids are just...
amazing. How many do you have?
Amazing. I have two.
Oh, wow.
I have two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What an adventure.
That is beautiful. So one golden nugget of wisdom to offer the Yoga Revealed podcast community, the practitioners, the teachers, the humans on the path. One golden nugget of wisdom from Miss Janet Stone.
No pressure. This is it. This is my final word. The golden nugget would be, it's already here. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. You don't need a new anything. You don't have to buy anything to get it. It's right here. Whether it looks like asana, whether it looks like chanting, whether it looks like whirling dervish, what you're looking for is right here.
Bless. Thank you for reminding us of this and transmitting all of your wisdom to the Yoga Revealed podcast community and to the Hanuman Yoga Festival.
Yeah.
We're so fortunate to have you here.
Hanuman Bolo.
Jai Hanuman.
Jai Hanuman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. This is Alec Rubin, here to extend a true heartwarming thanks to you for being a part of this 70,000 yogi strong community. You can practice with Janet Stone at the Yoga Tree in San Francisco. If you feel truly called to study with Janet but can't get out to San Francisco, here's what Janet has to say about her online Svadharma training.
The Svadharma course, Sva is own, Dharma is, in a sense, our path, but not just our path. It is based on truth. It is based on the full nature of all things, and often equated to, in a sense, our highest path, making choices that don't take us down our normal, habitual ways. So this is an unearthing and uncovering of what it is that we're up to in this lifetime. That when we make our choices, we make them with a little less delusion and confusion. So how in 5 weeks online can we accomplish this? I don't know. I don't even know if it's possible. However, we'll gather together, all of us making a commitment to show up day in, day out for 5 weeks. In that 5 weeks, what we commit to is pranayama. We commit to giving our mind a little bit of space, our body a little bit of space through meditation. We commit to a rhythmic asana practice So it's really a way of showing up, taking stock, what it is to clean out a little bit so that we can move into the next moment, the next day, the next situation, relationship, job, whatever it might be, with a little bit more clarity.
Use the code YOGAREVEALED, all one word, at the checkout window while on Janet's website, janetstoneyoga.com. Click on Course, and then click on Svadharma Virtual Immersion, and a link will also be at the bottom of the blog. This is a 20% discounted rate for this amazing immersion with Janet Stone. And the best part is, you can take it at your own pace. We hope you are further inspired to dive into your heart and shine bright in your community. The world needs it more than ever. We are blessed to be revealing yoga together, one insightful interview at a time. Until next time, shine bright and love life. Namaste.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.